Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today we are discussing a rather cool indie horror thriller, We Summon the Darkness. And my guest is director Mark Myers, and we are going to try very hard to talk about this movie without spoiling it, because there are two or three twists in it that, if you know they're coming, they're still going to surprise you, but I think they're juicier if you don't know they're coming.
Thank you. And juicy is better.
Yes, it is. This was such a delightful surprise.
Thank you.
I think I went in expecting the typical, these are your heroes, these are your predators, and everything about all of these characters gets turned sideways, and that makes it intriguing. I became more and more interested as the movie went on, just trying to figure out some of these characters, and that's what I enjoy about a story. I don't care how cheesy the effects are, how over the top some of the acting is. I mean, some of the worst movies have had some of the best over the top acting, and that's not the case here. We got over the top, we have cool effects, and we have out of left field peril.
Great. Yeah. That was part of the reason I fell in love with the script originally, was the potential to, when I first read the script, I had the same reaction. I was caught by surprise, and my assumptions that you apply to whatever you're reading or watching is part of the game and part of the fun, to lean into those things and then to change it. That's a way of kind of trying not to spoil it,
right?
But at least kind of going, okay, yeah, I guess a listener can come back and listen to this again and after they've taken in the movie.
Mm-hmm. You have no idea how badly I just want to dive into spoilers, because I want to pick all these little parts apart, and you are the person to talk to. But we're gonna play nice.
We'll figure it out. I'm sure some things will slip out.
Possibly. So. Yeah. How did you come across this script, and was the script loaded with as much dark comedic elements as end up in the final movie?
After My Friend Dahmer, which I wrote and directed, sort of had come out in theaters and done its thing after its festival play and launching a teaser Comic-Con and then it coming out in theaters, and it was probably around the same time it started becoming readily available on digital, at the top of 2019, I think it was 2019 or 2018. Yeah. 2018. I was sent the script, and my producing partner and I read it, and, I thought it was really funny, and I liked the world it was set in. I saw all the humor in it. There was a lot of it that's still on the screen. And then I gave it to her and Jodi Girgenti. She read it, and I watched her laugh out loud as well. And I was like, yeah, that's what I thought. It kind of confirmed my assumptions that this was first and foremost like a really fun script. It could be a really fun movie. More important than anything else, that it was like, oh, this would be fun to make. This would be fun to share. It would be fun for the actors to play these roles. That was the whole thing. And now it also tapped into, I guess, a sort of a style of filmmaking that I felt like was right around the corner from where My Friend Dahmer left off. That one was sort of creepy and suspenseful, but it wasn't wild, loud, and violent and bloody. And this script suggested that was possible, and that was the next best thing to do in this same vein of filmmaking. There's other films. I have another movie that's out right now that just came out a couple weeks ago called Human Capital with Liev Schreiber and Marissa Tomei, and that's a very different kind of movie. Unfortunately, I shot those directed those back to back. So the behind the scenes was also wild, just trying to balance those two. But this film, the humor that was on the page got further refined as we got closer to filmmaking, and I really honored all the sort of jokes that I thought were funny in the script. And then there was enough opportunity for the actors and I to come up with little other moments of humor along the way. But those might be more behavioral than the sort of funny lines that are throughout, I think, that are throughout the script. But the actors also bring so much to it that helps highlight the humor among all the chaos and mayhem. Mm-hmm. And it was that mix of the two with three leading ladies that just made it, that much fun, that much more fun to do.
Now, this really isn't a spoiler. The movie is set during the heavy metal follow bands around tour days of 1988. Oh, yes. And it dawns on me that none of the lead actors were probably even born in 88.
No, I think some of them were born in the 80s, yeah.
But
yeah,
they weren't following heavy metal bands around.
No, they could have been in diapers. Yeah.
How did you bring across the aesthetic of 1988? Because I will preface this by saying a lot of the dark humor in this movie reminds me of Heathers.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you. part of that is the team as a filmmaker that you're able to bring together for the film. So both my production designer and her team, and the wardrobe or costume designer and her team, were those two designers, those heads of those departments, were recalled this era when they were, teenagers. And so everyone could reflect on their own experiences. There's also this amazing short documentary, a cult documentary, that when I first read the film, it also was an immediate reference for me. It's called Head. And it was a documentary that's maybe about 16 minutes long, where some guy went through a parking lot outside of a Judas Priest concert in the mid to late 80s and just interviewed all the sort of wild kind of characters that were in this concert at the time. And there's like a 25-year-old guy with his 15-year-old girlfriend. They're drinking beers, and it's just like a totally different world than the one we live in now. But that documentary is so authentically captures, because it was just a doc, the sort of wardrobe, the personalities, the hairstyles, and that became a great reference point, or almost a Bible for all of us. And then we also shot up in Winnipeg, Canada, which on some level hasn't changed much from the 80s. So when we went to the small town of Selkirk outside of Winnipeg proper, it's a prairie town that could double as like a prairie town in middle America, like Indiana, and found a house that, at least in the exterior, felt like it was a believable construction from the mid 80s. And then, we had to sort of totally redo with furniture and wallpaper, the interior to sort of bring it back to that era. All of those things just ends up contributing to whatever I'm doing to, get everyone in the mood. We also played a lot of heavy metal on set between setups to kind of keep the hard rock alive.
The musical selections were amusing and whiplash inducing, going, oh my God, I remember that song. And, I have to ask, the interiors, how much of that was the actual house and how much of it was a set location? Because there was a lot of mayhem and a lot of blood. I don't think that's going into spoilers.
We shot the whole movie in 16 days.
Wow.
Which is crazy. And the only day we were on set was day 16, where we built the pantry to film the pantry with the with the characters who end up in the pantry. Mm-hmm. So everything else that was set around the house was actually filmed at that one property in the backyard, around the bonfire, where the cars parked. The exteriors are all around the house, in the front, the sides, the back, the porch in the back. And then as well, the sort of kill room, the living room, the bedrooms, the hallways, that was all just that house. So we kind of like pretty much lived there for most of production, except for, you know, the sort of the other locations that lead up to the house. And then that just meant lots of 80s style furniture was bought and brought in from other parts of Canada. And the same with, we had to choose some wallpaper that was appropriately awful for the 1980s, which also, when you get to production design, I just recall now part of the conversation was, well, it's not like people only had furniture from 1988. If it was 1988, it's the fact that they still had stuff from the early 80s. Maybe the wallpaper was a decade old. So you start, you know, playing the reality of just trying to find things that represented, you know, the early 80s as well, with the cars, all of that.
The slight, I think there was maybe two scenes where you get a glimpse of those basket chairs. I'm like, wow.
What, the ones in which ones? The one
the bonfire. Remember, I think it was the bonfire. There's like the wicker basket chairs where like you're sitting in a basket and the basket is like on a pedestal. I was like, wow, that's 80s.
Yeah, there's a bunch of that. I mean, the production design department just really totally knocked it out of the park. I mean, I'm so grateful. The more you're, you know, as a whole team, we can build a world, the easier it is for the actors to step into it and feel like they're in that 80s world. For actors, almost the first line of collaboration with them developing their character during pre-production may not always be the director. You know, I'm busy with location scouting and planning and working with all the departments and having conversations with some of the actors over the phone. But then the costume designer becomes, and the hairstylist become, that sort of first front line of having these intimate conversations, with sort of taking in some of the actor's thoughts and blending them with what we're working on in the office. And that sort of shapes each of their characters in individual ways. So, you know, for the team, they just kind of help build this world for everyone to step into.
So how easy was it to get the cast to embrace this? Because A, it looks like they're having a lot of fun, and B, I can imagine there would be some excitement given the, shall we say, interesting choice of roles that they play. Yes, I'm avoiding spoilers.
I know. You're trying to keep the good... Yeah, you're trying to keep the assumptions of who's good and who's bad alive. Mm-hmm. For the listener. Yeah, that's appreciated. You know, the script was fun. The environment was fun. All the actors came ready to work. Most scenes were very clear what had to happen. You know, sometimes with a script, you're trying to find a way to dig some conflict or some, you know, misunderstandings in the dialogue between characters to give the scene some more juice. But each of the scenes here were pretty clear, and I would just refine them before we got to set. And, you know, the more fun the environment was, it was just easier for everyone to just, you know, lose their shit and get crazy. if you kind of keep that spirit alive on set and try to keep any stress that's going on away from the actors, when they do step in front of the camera to do their stuff, you know, all of the kind of hurry up and all the sort of the pressure to kind of get everything right and ready for them, that falls off, and all of a sudden now you're just filming people doing crazy shit.
So how much of the effects that we see are practical and how much are digital? Because some of the explosive blood tricks seemed practical.
They're all practical. All, nice. It was a Yeah, it was all practical. There was, to get technical, there's one chocolate milkshake on a windshield that was thrown by a special effects guy or a stunt guy driving past our main vehicle when the camera was inside the vehicle. And when it hits a windshield, that was, you know, that was, we did that twice, I believe. And I can't remember which take we used, but it was practical, and the milkshake hit and splatter across the windshield. And I do think we might have embellished the point, the smear with a little bit of digital effects later, but it was practical. All the other blood stuff, all practical. It felt like I was also stepping into, you know, maybe a movie you might make in another era where there wasn't a conversation about, well, we're going to do this in post. Mm-hmm. There was no green screens or anything. Everything was happening right in front of me, right in front of the camera, with all the fire and the fumes and the gunfire and the explosions and the blood and the stabbings coming out of various places on people's bodies. And then there's one effect near the end that's related to, you know, fire.
Yes.
That one was a mix of visual effects and practical effects. There's this company, these two guys out of Montreal that joined us in Winnipeg, called the Blood Brothers. And these two practical effects guys were absolutely incredible. I had so much fun working with them. I felt like they were magicians. You know, we'd gather around the storyboards for any of the fight sequences and make sure that we're all on the same page. And then they would, you know, work on putting the prosthetic and the blood tubes hidden in around the body or inside the clothes. And then we would get to discuss how much of the blood flow, like at what pressure it should be, because I always wanted everything to be look realistic and not absurd, not like a sprouting fountain of blood coming out of somebody's limb, like I don't know, I'm thinking about like Kill Bill right now, you know, that would sort of had a different sense of humor, I guess, but that's not what we were going for. I was going for like as realistic as possible for the movie, for any of these practical effects.
Well, the movie's been out for a week now. What sort of feedback have you been getting? How have fans been reacting to the sublime ridiculousness of this romp?
Well, the world is kind of sublime, crazy, and ridiculous right now, and this is a nice escape from that. It's actually a movie that I think is also a lot of it about the influence of mass media and how the creation of fear enables certain people to remain in power. And it's also a satire on that level, because there's also various characters who arrive at the door at inopportune times. And so there's a lot of relevance that when I first read the script, I think it hauntingly, you know, and I think for a long time will remain. And so I feel like a lot of people are catching wind of all of that. And then also people are just loving the wild mayhem heavy metal ride that it is. And that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be first and foremost fun, escapist, but also sort of woven in, have a little bit of a point to it, without being, you know, didactic. And then there's always, like with any movie, there's people that, you know, go, oh, I wish there was more gore, or I wish you made a larger statement about the human condition. But that neither one of those things was the goal of this project, was to suggest certain relevant issues woven into looking back at the satanic panic and the ridiculousness of that, and have a good time along the way for anyone who's sober or high or drunk while they watch it.
I have to say that I appreciated the subtle dig at being manipulated by mass media and the hypocrisy of people who use other people's trust for their own financial gain. And yeah, we're never going to see the end of that, are we?
No. And it's a little bit of a dig at like the Christian right, who was, you know, sort of calling heavy metal in the 80s the devil's music. And, you know, sort of blaming things like Dungeons and Dragons and other things as, you know, the work of the devil. And and all this other bullshit. And so it's nice to kind of recall all of that and then go, wait a second, some of this manipulation still, unfortunately, still does exist in various forms coming from various, you know, places. So it's a cruel reminder that the bullshit continues.
Yeah. Well, We Summon the Darkness is available on, I think, just about every digital platform, or will soon be at that. It's well worth checking out.
Thank you. It is on all platforms.
It is on all iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes, Vudu, Amazon, cable VOD, whoever your provider is.
You know what I want for this movie?
What?
I want Joe Bob Briggs to do a Shudder commentary on it.
Cool.
That's what I want. That's what I want. Just because it's a throwback to all the old school horror movies of the 80s that we had so much fun with. And Joe Bob was a big part of that. And this, like I said, this is a fun movie. I'm recommending people check it out. And where can people find you online to follow up with what you're doing next?
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. My handle seems to be at all of these things, just my name, you know, at Mark Meyers. So MarkMeyers. And that's at Twitter, Instagram, you know, I guess Facebook. And so through Twitter and Instagram, I guess we've been sharing that stuff. But Twitter seems to be a good way to do a deep dive as we retweet the nice things people say about the movie, which on Twitter, I think it's at We Summon. And then We Summon the Darkness is the Instagram handle. But I guess the hashtag We Summon the Darkness is also good.
Cool.
And then, you know, through all that, people can go revisit My Friend Dahmer. They can also check out this other movie that came out March 20th called Human Capital. And then I'm in post on another movie right now. So it's just been a good, you know, a busy moment for me.
Cool. Well, Mark, thank you so much for sharing your time and bringing this dark, delightful comedy, horror, blood spatter, trip down memory lane to us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
And we will have links. We do have links to where you can find We Summon the Darkness for yourselves. Like I said, April 10th, it came out on video on demand, digital, and DVD. There was a bit of an audio dropout, so the full name of the documentary Mark mentioned wasn't there. It's called Heavy Metal Parking Lot, and apparently it was done in 1986, filmed by a couple of guys in the parking lot outside of the Judas Priest concert, like Mark mentioned. But imagine my surprise to find out that parking lot was outside of the Capitol Center, the old Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland, which was part of my stomping grounds as a teenager. Saw my first concert there, which was Van Halen in the early 80s. So, yeah. That is a cult classic, apparently. It's only 17 minutes long. I don't know if it's still available on DVD, but it was released on DVD in 2006. So, if you're curious, go find it. A few other things about We Summon the Darkness. Except for Alexandra Daddario, all of the main leads, the two girls, the three guys, were all born well after 1988. They were in the early to mid 90s. So, yeah, kids. The other interesting thing is one of the three guys, the big guy, Ivan, his name is Austin Swift, and he is the younger brother of Taylor Swift. Who knew? I didn't. And now, maybe you do too. Anyway, that's what we have for We Summon the Darkness. Again, check out the links and check the film out if you get a chance. I'm also waiting to find out more details about the live Q&A session that happened after the live stream premiere of Sea Fever. The conversation included all of the main cast members, director Neissa Hardiman, actors Hermione Korfeld, Connie Nielsen, and Doug Ray Scott, hosted by Janina Gavankar. So that was a fun little Zoom conversation that happened. And I want to know if that video is going to be made public on YouTube or included on the Blu-ray release later. And I don't have that answer yet, but as soon as I do, I will let you know. And if you have any questions or comments about We Summon the Darkness or Sea Fever or anything else coming up, just give us a call. The number is 602-635-6976 or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. If you have any questions or comments about Tigers Are Not Afraid, let me know, because I'm doing something with that coming up. Just a tease. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi, all of the podcasts that we've done so far, through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Player FM, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher, you can leave us a review. Please do so, because that helps raise the profile of the show and helps other people find it more readily. You can check us out on Twitter. We're at Slice of Sci-Fi. We're on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com, the hub of all the science fiction, paranormal, horror, supernatural, comic book, fandom fun. I'm not even sure what I just said. The important thing is that the website and the podcast has been part of internet life, has been on the internet, in the podcast space, for 15 years. And I've been here for all 15 years. And this never gets old. I have fun making these. I hope you're having fun listening to these. And who knows, maybe another 15 years is on the plate. We'll just keep putting these together as long as they are fun. And I don't see that stopping anytime soon. How about you? But you can leave comments and commentary on any of the interviews we've done, on any of the reviews we've done, both movie and television. So come on over, check us out. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting our efforts here through Patreon and PayPal. The pledges that you make really do help keep us online. So thank you, everyone who is helping with that. There is an increased need right now. I probably need to do some sort of fundraising drive. Not sure how to do that, but I do have a lot of books and DVDs and Blu-rays around here that need new homes. So I don't know, maybe I could do something with that beyond just having those as patron perks for pledges through Patreon. I don't know. Something to think about. Anyway, if you want to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you can only do a donation every now and then, the link to use is PayPal, paypal.me/scifisummer. And there will be a secret sauce contest coming up soonish. Stay tuned for that. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening and supporting. And we'll be back with more Slices Sci-Fi next week. Take care.